Okay, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Jennifer Hu, and I'm the Vice Chair of the Global Taiwan Institute. I wanted to welcome everybody to our seminar today. Russell Hsiao, who usually moderates our panels, is actually in Houston today giving a speech, so I'm taking his place. And so we're going to change up the format a little bit. Before that, I would like to first welcome everybody and also recognize a few people in the audience. Today, our chairman, Robert Lai, is in the audience. And also, we're very pleased that Dr. Richard Bush of the Brookings Institute is also here. And also wanted to recognize our staff members who work very hard to make all of our seminars possible. Anna Scott Bell, Lily Ling, and Melissa Newcomb. So without further ado, let me introduce our distinguished guests today, our panelists. To my immediate left is David Wang, Managing Partner of InnoBridge Capital. He is also one of our co-founders. He is the advisor to Taiwan's government on the Asian Silicon Valley Initiative. To the left of David is Steve Lang. Steve is the Deputy U.S. Coordinator for International Communications and Information Policy and Director of the International Communications and Information Policy Office of Bilateral and Regional Affairs in the Bureau of Economic and Business Affairs. In this capacity, Steve leads the team that coordinates the U.S.-Taiwan Digital Economy Forum, which just held its second annual meeting in October in Washington, D.C. To Steve's left is Arthur Du, who is an internet entrepreneur, and I kind of lost track of how many companies he has founded. He's one of our young directors of our organization, and he also mentors startup companies in the U.S. and Taiwan. So today we're going to be a little different from how we usually conduct our seminars. We're going to start with David's presentation, where he's going to give sort of a background of what this new Asian Silicon Valley initiative is all about, followed by that will be Steve and Arthur, who will give their comments and remarks, and then we'll have a discussion and Q&A with the audience. I think, as a lot of you know, since President Tsai Ing-wen took office, she has announced sort of her new innovative policies for the industrial development and restructuring of Taiwan's economy. The 5+2, the so-called 5+2 policy includes the biotechnology and pharmaceuticals, green energy, national defense, smart machinery, and Asian Silicon Valley, as well as new agriculture and circular economy. Asian Silicon Valley is one of the most important initiatives, and it was unveiled, formally approved by the Executive Yuan of Taiwan in September. I will leave it to David, who could tell you a little more about sort of the background and the context of this policy. But the story actually doesn't start this year. It actually started many years ago when President Tsai Ing-wen actually visited Silicon Valley and started incubating and sort of cultivating this idea of how to transform Taiwan's economy to take advantage of the innovative internet-based economy that we are facing these days. So let me turn to David for a briefing on the initiative.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's my honor to be here to share with you the story behind the Asian Silicon Valley and our future plan in terms of development agency we'll do for Taiwan. It's been, I have been living in San Jose or Silicon Valley for 35 years. And as an executive at Cisco System, I had a chance to meet a lot of government officer and also some of the enterprise from Taiwan. And one outstanding people I met about 4 years ago was at that time, I call her Professor Tsai. She is really interested in how the success story of Silicon Valley. So I get a chance to host her visit from Stanford to all the young entrepreneurs, and also from angel investor to venture capital, and also to visit the enterprise like Facebook or Cisco. So she was inspired by the success story of Silicon Valley. And while facing the challenge, the economic growth is so slowed down, and also Taiwan is losing the edge of the competitiveness in terms of the high-tech industry. So as a matter of fact, you may know for the past couple of years, our export has been decreasing, it's not increasing. So we're facing the big challenge, and she is looking for a solution. What's the new model, the new business model, or the industrial for Taiwan move forward to grow the economy again? So she has offered five industry objectives, and Silicon Valley, Asian Silicon Valley, is one of the key, I would say, flagship initiative for Taiwan to move forward. And today I cannot go over too much detail because of time constraint. But however, if you're interested in the detailed information about Asian Silicon Valley initiative, I think I will make the slide available to everyone online. And from IT to Taiwan has been doing quite well, in the 80s or even 90s in the IT industry. So based on the hardware development from the IC design house to semiconductor to PC to notebook, however, we miss a big one, which is the how to integrate the hardware to the software and also to provide a service. So we didn't catch quite well in the internet arena. So that's the mission link that we need to, how can we make it happen again in Taiwan? So my mission actually is to reconnect Taiwan, to bridge the gap between Silicon Valley and Taiwan. That's what this initiative is all about. I remember 25 years ago when I joined Cisco System, and we created a slogan called, "The Internet will change the way we work, the way we pray, and the way we live." And actually, more than true today, we can see the development of IoT it's a global phenomenon. And you can see how much it's going to impact on factory or smart factory, how much will impact on the financial sector as well. So we see this as a great opportunity for Taiwan to participate, because Taiwan already has provided some of the device or the hardware or even the network infrastructure. And how can we build on top of our success before and be able to create another layer, which is the data center, the big data area, and provide a service and be able to grow the industry. For the global economy impact, I would say IoT is going to grow, based on all the information we collect globally, I think it's going to have a fast growing sector in the industry as well. So what we would like to do is to leverage what we have and connect to the global market, connect to Silicon Valley in terms of the new emerging technology area, and be able to grow the sector and to provide more value-added service or application. And this application, we believe, is more in the enterprise area and also in the smart factory area, which changed the industry big time. So what Taiwan can offer is not just the hardware. We would like to connect with Silicon Valley, with also the successful company, the big company interested in this area to be have an international collaboration and to develop this brand together. It's not going just to be Taiwan by itself. We know we need to partner with the different cluster in the emerging technology area. And one aspect is also the startup in Silicon Valley, because that's still the innovation come from most of the companies focused in that area. So our vision actually is quite simple. We like to drive the economic growth by innovation and the entrepreneurship, because this is the success of Cisco, for Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley has been the innovation capital, you know, of the world. I would, you know, say that. And a lot of the success actually is from this startup. And the startup, actually, they create a very good environment, which is including how to attract the people globally, and also how to provide the finance or the capital by, you know, through the angel investment and also through the global, you know, venture capital investment. So I think that's very important for Taiwan too. Taiwan has a lot of restriction in terms of financial incentive program, also have a lot of restrict on the international professional. And we know there are certain areas we need to change in order to attract more, you know, talent globally. People are still the most important assets, you know, in the economy growth. And also the other side is how we transform and upgrade talent industrial structure with IoT. We can no longer compete effectively in the OEM, ODM business, because we already lose the age of cost cutting. And cost cutting has been break down all the wage for our engineer or the professional in Taiwan. And that's what the younger generation are suffering today. So what we need to do is really to bring up their ability and bring up, you know, so give them the opportunity, give them the money so they can do, you know, the innovation development. And so what's the framework we have? We'd like to provide one ecosystem, which is to connect all the R&D capability or capacity, you know, from university to the institutional and also existing corporation. That's including local company and also the global company. And I think a very important part is the startups. You know, we need to, you know, provide a good, you know, ecosystem for the younger generation, young entrepreneur, be able to access to the capital, even the technology, and be able to leverage it and to make it happen. Like for instance, for the institution, we have about 8,000, you know, well-educated talent in, you know, Industrial Information Institute or E3. You know, we have a lot of good talent there. And we also have a program how to unleash the research capability from the university. A lot of professors has been doing a lot of fundamental research. However, they are lack of business model, or they cannot access to any of the capital investment. So what we need to do is to enable them to figure out a good business model, and we can enable them to work together with the startup or with the company, be able to work together as one ecosystem to provide, you know, the innovation, enable them to work on IoT and beyond. And there are two core elements. What I would say is a startup and entrepreneurship ecosystem. We need to increase the talent supply, you know, including locally. We are going to create a training program for the younger people. They are well equipped, well trained for the future work. And also we would like to open up the people from the outside, international, you know, professionals. We need to change a lot of rule in this area. And we also want to provide business expansion capital to them. So a lot of the regulation and law, we already identify where are the obstacles, where we need to lift up and be able to enable and empower, you know, more professionals to work in Taiwan and work together, you know, and be able to have some incentive for the startup environment or investment as well. And the other thing is to promote the IoT innovation. For the local government and the central government need to work together. We need to define a good, you know, guideline or the architect for the local government to open up their platform or the research lab or the experimental for the solution that they have. So that's how are we going to promote the IoT solution with the local government. So we'd like to create an IoT ecosystem as well, from device all the way to the service. So that's the plan for us to move forward. So for the future, Taiwan's hardware advantage, how to integrate the hardware advantage with the software, you know. we can leverage outside, well, I would say the Silicon Valley's success to with with the Taiwan government. One good example I will use, maybe some of you may not aware, there's one company called NextLab, and they're doing the sensor network for the environmental control. And actually, the founder is from Apple. But however, all the execution, all the engineering is done in Taiwan. And they can leverage a lot of access to a lot of Taiwan engineers. Later on, they sold, you know, to Google. Google acquired it. And this is kind of model actually was happening before. You know, like my company, some of the startup, we are working and we are leveraging a lot of engineering resource from Taiwan. Taiwan has a lot of well-educated young generation, but however, they cannot access to the market or the product definition. However, in US, I think in Silicon Valley especially, we are very clear what's the trend, what's the direction. How can we leverage Silicon Valley's product definition with the execution engineer from Taiwan and make that as a one of the model moving forward? So as I say, for the local government, they also play a role. They want to participate. For example, like in the Kaohsiung Smart City project, smart transportation, we like to create certain collaboration and bring in the good solution or good technology from US as well, and be able to use Kaohsiung as an integrated platform, including Tainan in the southern region. So we can establish a good solution, and later on, I hope that this solution can apply to different cities and be able to export to other countries as well. So this is the link that we'd like to connect all together to make it happen. And our strategy, again, we'd like to optimize our startup and entrepreneurship ecosystem. And also, we want to linkage, between the new tech cluster, not just Silicon Valley. I would say for those areas, we like to, even including Israel, India, or even Japan, we like to see how much collaboration we can work together to make IoT a success, to create a win-win-win situation. And we like to build a supply chain for all the IoT from, because we already have a good sensor device or in a network infrastructure area. How can this be integrated with the software solution and be able to deliver globally? So this is the strategy we have. So how are we going to make this happen? This office will be, we call it the Asian Silicon Valley Development Agency. Later this month, we're going to establish an office in Taoyuan, and this will drive and manage the entire project moving forward. And this is at a national initiative level. A lot of cabinet will be oversees this project, and the executive officer will be done by National Development Council. And I'll play a role in this area as a chief investment officer as well. And this is not just 1 year project, this will be a 7 years project. In the first year, we already allocate about $360 million. And moving forward, we will evaluate periodically, and just like every business plan, we need to know how effectively we are doing and be able to change the course or adjust what we need to do. So this project is very important for the future of Taiwan's industrial structure. Where are the goals? So the goal, we like to connect to Silicon Valley and other global tech clusters. So the success, how we measure it, is how much we can establish the link between Silicon Valley and other clusters. And we would like to develop the industry for the next generation to move Taiwan moving forward. And we'll become an innovation startup for a lot of younger generation, including the people in Asia or in South Asia. When they think about where to start their own business in the IoT, they'll think about Taiwan is one of their choice. So there are a lot of measurements that we like to measure, which is how can Taiwan's global market share increase from, you know, gradually, you know, in for the next maybe 10 years as well. We'd like to increase that. And we'd like to see how many startups be successfully been incubated, or even for the foreign company to set an R&D center in Taiwan. After we announced this initiative, we received a lot of interest from the US company as well, that including Microsoft, IBM, Cisco, Qualcomm. They already show interest in how can we work together and to leverage this key initiative to move forward as a partner, strategic partner. So we also like to, you know, create some global system integrator who can do all the end-to-end solution for, you know, the industry, for the smart factory or for the smart city project. And so I think that I'm quickly go through this, fly through these slides, and I'm sure the reform and the renewal of the Taiwan industry of technology movement will gain pace in the next year. So that's why we would like to make this happen. It's a critical project. Thank you.
Well, thank you, David. Thank you for the detailed explanation. Well, very brief but detailed explanation of the initiative. Next, we're going to have Steve, who's going to address sort of the existing cooperation between the U.S. and Taiwan in digital economy and other potential engagement.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer. And thank you, David. That was very interesting. I'm very honored to have the chance to be here today to talk with you. And I'm excited to talk with you about the U.S.-Taiwan Digital Economy Forum and our cooperation in the areas of information and communication technology. The Digital Economy Forum was facilitated by the American Institute in Taiwan and the Taipei Economic and Cultural Representative Office here in the United States. And I'm also happy, though, to have the opportunity to talk with you about what the United States is doing in the area of Internet of Things, and to provide a few thoughts in the context of Taiwan's Asia and Silicon Valley initiative. But first, let me say thanks to GTI and to Jennifer for inviting me here today. So the United States and Taiwan have a strong relationship under the auspices of AIT and TECRA, and we collaborate in a lot of areas. I'm glad to have been a part of our increased engagement in the area of the digital economy, and my office at the State Department works with economies around the world in this space. In October, the United States and Taiwan authorities held the second AIT TECRA Digital Economy Forum. The first forum took place in December 2015 in Taipei. The United States and Taiwan have a long and productive relationship in the area of information and communication technologies, ICT, technologies that perhaps more than any other have really changed our societies, our economies, and how we lead our daily lives. We're at a time right now when hundreds of millions of people come online every year, opening new markets and connecting even more creative force and innovation to a global ecosystem of entrepreneurship and innovation. New opportunities are exploding with exciting new technologies like the Internet of Things and artificial intelligence, among others, and with rapidly growing bandwidth and increased mobility. In this rapidly changing ICT environment, we believe it's important to adopt policy and regulatory environments that promote innovation, trade, investment, and growth in the digital economy. We also need to ensure that our processes for engaging stakeholders are fair, transparent, and predictable, and that our development of policies and regulations includes meaningful stakeholder input and consultation. At the second Digital Economy Forum here in Washington in October, we exchanged views on policy and regulatory environments that promote innovation and global commerce, that facilitate the free flow of information across borders, which is a high priority for the United States, and encourage adoption and deployment of the best available technologies. We discussed how we can enable the digital economy through trade and cross-border data flows, preserve and protect data privacy, enhance cooperation to expand ICT connectivity around the world, and foster the development of Internet of Things and smart cities, as well as facilitating the deployment of financial technologies. Through our discussions, we affirmed our shared support for policy and regulatory environments that promote innovation, trade, investment, and growth in the digital economy. We reiterated our support for the development of global standards that are voluntary, industry-led, and market-driven. We also affirmed our support for policies that facilitate the free flow of information across borders and enhance privacy protection. And this includes implementing and promoting interoperable frameworks for privacy and data protection, such as the APEC cross-border privacy rule system. Since the October meeting, the Department of State's acting special representative for global partnerships, Thomas DeBase, visited Taiwan to help kickstart one area of our DEF collaboration, such as helping bridge the digital divide in the Pacific Islands, as well as promoting closer cooperation on cultivating startup ecosystems. So as I mentioned, one of the things we talked about in the Digital Economy Forum was the Internet of Things and how to foster the development of that technology. Nowhere is the potential to transform our world more apparent right now, in my opinion, than in the Internet of Things or IoT. It's been projected, and David already gave you some figures, but it's been projected that by 2020, there'll be 50 billion devices connected through the Internet of Things, and that it could generate $1.7 trillion in spending by 2020. As David mentioned, and I'll just highlight, I understand that one of the goals of the Asian Silicon Valley is to capture 5% of the global IoT market, up from Taiwan's current share of 3.8%. We believe that the best way to capture the potential of IoT is to allow the market to drive it. With IoT, like any new emerging area, the regulatory environment has yet to be fully defined. We think that it's essential to have conversations with the private sector and the users as the technology and applications continue to develop. Our digital economy relies on flexibility and interoperable standards. With 4.9 billion devices connected on the planet already and many billions more being added over the next decade, we need to have commonly agreed upon technical solutions and standards that ensure interoperability, security, and portability of digital devices. But one of the strengths of the digital economy is that these standards have largely been developed voluntarily by the engineers who know innovation best, and this is taking place outside formal government channels. In the United States, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, or NTIA, is organizing several multi-stakeholder processes to bring together stakeholders from industry, academia, the private sector, to understand the challenges of IoT security. Technical experts in major standard-setting organizations like the International Standards Organization, the World Wide Web Consortium, IEEE, or the Internet Engineering Task Force develop standards through open participatory processes. They have proven more capable of addressing issues with the speed and flexibility that's really required in a rapidly changing internet environment and the digital economy. The United States government believes that supporting these processes is fundamentally in our interest in promoting the digital economy and for Taiwan and other economies around the world as well. And I'll just mention some of the initiatives that we have in the United States right now that are intended to help promote the development of IoT. In September 2015, the United States launched a $160 million International Smart Cities Initiative, which reflected a growing interest in IoT as a way to improve life in urban areas through better management of resources and public services. This initiative was expanded in 2016 by doubling the number of participating cities and providing over $80 million in new federal investments. Our National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, has also led the Global Cities Team Challenge, or GCTC. This is a collaborative platform that enables local governments, nonprofit organizations, academic institutions, technologists, and private corporations from all over the world to form project teams for action clusters to work on groundbreaking IoT applications within the smart city environment. Taipei and Taichung are both participating in GCTC, which is great, and we welcome communities from all economies, including more from Taiwan, to participate in it. And in addition, there are also plans to possibly develop a smart cities working group that could carry forward cooperation in this field at the digital economy. I'll just say a few words about the Asia and Silicon Valley initiative, because I think me and my colleagues in the US government are still learning about it. From what I understand about it, many of the fundamental objectives underpinning the initiative are consistent with the US approach to developing technologies in this area in the digital economy. These include facilitating innovation and entrepreneurship, of course, fostering and enabling policy and regulatory environments, encouraging industry-led international standards, and creating a high-quality internet environment. So we look forward to continuing to learn more about the Asian Silicon Valley Initiative and how we can continue to encourage close ties between U.S. And Taiwan firms and people. As I mentioned, our Special Representative for Global Partnerships, Thomas DeBase, recently went to Taiwan, and I understand that during that trip there was a roundtable event with leaders from Taiwan's startup community, Taiwan authorities who are responsible for startup policy, as well as U.S. Private sector and public sector representatives. And the roundtable produced an agenda for future concrete cooperation on high-tech and digital startups. And we look forward to continuing to work together to build close ties between our respective startup communities. So to wrap up, I just want to emphasize how happy we are to have a partnership with the Taiwan authorities on a broad array of international issues, including, and for me especially, the digital economy. And we recognize that Taiwan is highly capable of leading initiatives to address emerging challenges in the Asia-Pacific region and beyond. And the United States government feels that both Taiwan and the world benefit from Taiwan's meaningful participation in regional and global discussions. So through opportunities like the Digital Economy Forum, we'll continue to expand our cooperation in the future. And I look forward to hearing from others in the room today about any ideas for how we can further enhance that cooperation. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Steve, for very good comments about the existing cooperation and just sort of Taiwan's role in some of this. Next, we're going to have Arthur, who will sort of offer some of his perspectives as an entrepreneur in the internet space. Arthur?
Well, first of all, it's an honor to be here, and I thank Jennifer and GTI for inviting me, and thanks David for the presentation, Steve for the response. So personally, my background, I come from internet entrepreneurial background. I'm primarily based out of New York, and so in response to the presentation, I would like to delve a little bit more into the talent and the industrial sort of bit, like role models for Taiwan, and how we could sort of draw inspiration from models within the U.S. So starting with talent, so I think there are definitely like good news and bad news. That starting with the good news, I think David hit the nail on the head when he talked about how 80% of the business value would eventually come from data-driven services. But traditionally, Taiwan has focused a lot on the hardware manufacturing sector. And so the good news is that because of that, in the last couple of decades, Taiwan has has a very well-educated population. The college attainment rate is roughly double that in the U.S. And many of the graduates are actually engineering graduates. So in terms of raw engineering talent, that the foreseeable future, Taiwan will have a good supply of good engineers. And in fact, as we speak, a lot of devices are being manufactured in Taiwan right now. So in terms of some of the more, I think, real concerns about the talent, I will break it down into I think two main aspects. And I think the first one is when the internet bubble bursted in the early 2000s, I mean, before that, Taiwan was actually a very active member of the internet economy. In fact, it's one of the larger markets that started, that kicked it off, that Taiwan had Trend Micro that competes with Norton and McAfee, and Taiwan had Ulead that competes with Adobe and a lot of software companies of that sort. But since the internet bubble did, the funding sort of dried up and the industry stagnated. And what we saw is that for the last 15 years, we hadn't seen a major internet company, you know, risen from the ashes from Taiwan. And what that left is not just the talent gap in terms of engineering, but we're seeing an increasing talent gap in managerial talent. And the reason for that is because business processes in the software industry have changed drastically in the last 15 years. That if you wind the clocks back in the early 2000s and the 90s, it's very much like an assembly line, that one business function, be it marketing, product management, engineering, design, quality assurance, you hand tasks from one end to another, and then once you hit the end, then you ship it out and it goes to your clients. So it's a lot like running a factory. But today, even our largest companies like Google and Microsoft, they most of their services are run in real time. They gather data from all different sources. Everything has become so connected that your team, your organization have become a lot flatter, where people from different expertise collaborate with each other. So the management of an assembly line is very different from the sort of management necessary to manage a large number of creatives. And especially when you scale it up to a global company, it's very difficult to manage a flat organization that way. So that is one of the biggest challenges that Taiwan is facing, that for the last 15 years, not a lot of management talent has been trained to manage that sort of organization necessary to grow the tech economy. And I would say the second largest challenge is how industrial expertise has changed in the last 15 years. And so back in the days that, so Taiwan has focused a lot on training engineers in the electrical field, in computer and mechanical, but nowadays when we talk about expertise, we don't look at raw engineering talent. We look at field-specific interdisciplinary talent in every individual. And to give an example, like artificial intelligence and robotics, it's not enough just to be a good computer scientist or an electrical engineer. You need to understand decision theory. That's how computers make decisions, and that comes from economics. And you need to understand psychology, which is how, because a lot of the intelligent theories come from the study of the human mind. And we draw a lot of inspiration from philosophy and fields alike. So every person who's an active member in developing artificial intelligence, now every person is expected to have a well-grounded background, so the person can think about real-life problems critically from different angles and to create solutions that are relevant. So what that means for Taiwan is that the last couple of decades, most of the education and training has been focused on raw engineering talent and engineering management. And basically, in terms of government and also in terms of higher ed, all the way down to K-12, has sort of shunned focus on basic sciences, social sciences, humanities. And so when you want to build a well-balanced interdisciplinary talent pool, there are some key ingredients that are missing. So I believe that there are definitely things that could be done both in the short term and the long term. So the short term, the initiative can create incentives for more collaboration with people in the U.S. and find modes of collaboration to bring innovation and Taiwanese manufacturing talent together. In the long term, I believe that beyond the Asian Silicon Valley initiative, the Taiwanese government also will need to take part in reshaping how education is done in Taiwan. So for the next 10, 20 years, that you'll start to see more well-rounded education for for upcoming, for a new talent pool. And then also in terms of connecting with the rest of the world, I think Silicon Valley is definitely by far the world's largest industrial sector, the technology center. And then in terms of funding and just the size of the funding, it outpaces the number two tech center, which is New York, by threefold. I think for many cities that it's very, very difficult to directly replicate what Silicon Valley has done because of how Silicon Valley was created, that it had lots of political, economic, and different sort of support from the U.S. government during the Cold War era, and it created a science park culture where people commute to these kind of sterile science park where there's a lot of concentration in tech-related development. But then for beyond Silicon Valley, outside of that, you see a lot of tech centers like New York, like Boston, like Washington, D.C., like L.A., like Chicago. The big sort of philosophical difference is taking existing valuable industries like media, like entertainment, like medical, education, and which a lot of these centers tend to be more on the East Coast. So in the East Coast ecosystems, you tend to see more fusion of traditional industries and technology, as opposed to in Silicon Valley, it's more like creating, it's like magic. You create something, from nothing. I think for Taiwan, it's great to draw inspiration in terms of innovation from Silicon Valley, but in terms of business model, I think the East Coast tech centers tend to be better models for that. And just taking, since I'm from New York, I'll compare New York to Taiwan, that Taipei is the center of the island. And in terms of so the population of Taipei and its density is roughly equivalent to that of Manhattan's, and the whole island is pretty much the tri-state area, both in terms of population and population density. And Taipei City is the media, entertainment, financial, political center of the island. So instead of trying to compete with the world in terms of raw research and development power, it'll be great to delve into the traditional industries where Taiwan remains competitive, and combine technology with these traditional industry, which I believe that IoT is the entrance to that. So that would be my 2 cents. Thank you.
Thank you, Arthur. That was very good perspectives on, you know, from an entrepreneur and also from somebody who's very, very, you know, connected to the internet-based economy. So I wanted to maybe come back to, before we open Q&A to the audience, I wanted to ask some questions of the panel. I guess with David, you mentioned that there are now some steps that the government, or some legal and regulatory steps that the government has taken or plans to take. I was wondering if you can address that a little bit more in detail, what they're trying to do so that they can create a more investment-friendly environment and attract the human talent necessary to help make this initiative successful.
Okay. Well, first of all, you got to create incentive for the entrepreneur to start up. Used to, our stock structure or the capital investment has a lot of limitation, make them have no motivation to have a success, you know, startup. Even you are successful, you know, the pie or the share you get is not significant enough to motivate these people to do it. So we're going to, you know, lift up that. So give more incentive to the founding team or the founders. That's one part. And also the tax. The area, I think the corporate tax is too high. So those areas we're going to lower that part. And there are a lot of restrictions to hire foreign professional. It's almost impossible for a lot of, you know, good talent from, you know, all over the world to work in Taipei. I think that part is going to lift up as well. And more, we like to create an environment more like Silicon Valley, which is a very open, you know, environment. And as long as you had a good idea, you're the right idea, you can do startup easily. So in terms of access to the capital market as well, I think that area is going to be much more flexible and more have incentive for investor willing to put angel money or put in the venture capital and make them more profitable.
Thank you. wanted to ask Steve, since you mentioned a lot about some of the standards that are being developed by NIST, by NTIA, I was wondering what your view is in terms of what you think the significance of shared norms and values are in this, for establishing standards in this new domain, and also sort of evaluate what Taiwan's importance as a potential partner in these efforts.
Yeah, well, just in terms of tech, I mean, the NTIA and NIST initiatives that I mentioned were not standards development initiatives. In terms of like technical standards for products or technologies, because the United States really has a very strong belief that that the market should lead standards development, and that is, we believe, a key ingredient to success in this field for us and for the development of the digital economy around the world too. I think one of the key things about particularly the NTIA initiative is that it is a multi-stakeholder initiative because we do emphasize the importance of having a consultation with stakeholders as policies and regulations are developed. And the other key piece of that is that the process has to be open, transparent, and predictable. I mean, you don't want an environment where one stakeholder is informing the process, but others are not. That kind of industry-led development and consultation with stakeholders as part of the regulatory environment we feel are very important to the environment.
Thanks. I wanted to ask Arthur. So you mentioned obviously that there are different clusters that will be, you know, sort of more similar to what Taiwan wants to perhaps strive for. You mentioned New York, possibly other cities. And that is actually one of the goals of Taiwan, is not just to look at Silicon Valley. You know, I think it's hard to replicate the success to Taiwan. So I was wondering if you can sort of address what you think. You mentioned, you know, certain things that needs to be present for the plan to be successful. But are there things that you think Taiwan has a niche based on your experience in New York and also your experience in cultivating startups in Taiwan?
I think we're in terms of directions that Taiwan can take. So around the world, there are very different types of tech centers. So far, I mean, the largest ones that we're looking at, the first one is definitely Silicon Valley, and so far the second largest tech cluster is the Northeast Corridor, and the third one I believe is Linden, which is supposed to be the tech center of European Union, and the fourth largest one would be Beijing. So I think these tech clusters are the ones that we tend to focus on, but the thing is that they have the sort of economic and political influence that it's hard for Taiwan to match directly. So a lot of the policies and also business models that we observe in these areas, sometimes it's great inspiration, but it couldn't directly translate to an action plan. But around the world, there are definitely smaller countries that have been successful in developing their tech industry, like Israel, like Sweden. So these two countries, they traditionally have very, very strong research and development power. And then actually smaller countries that are not yet like making headlines, but taking like Chile. Chile, Santiago, there's a government-backed plan that it provides free grant funding for international entrepreneurs up to, I believe, 40,000. And the last time I visited that, it was pretty amazing that about 50% of the entrepreneurs that go to Chile are from the U.S. And the rest, I met people from all over the world, from like Russia, from UK, from India, China, and I met a couple of Taiwanese entrepreneurs too. So so recently, Puerto Rico actually started a program that's very similar. And for these economies, I think the aim is less about competing directly with Silicon Valley, but to create some sort of incentive for more international just exchange of ideas. And it has done that. So for Taiwan, I think the Taiwan is sort of in a position that it can be both. And I think both are very important incentives for the international community to sort of reconnect with Taiwan in terms of internet economy, but also for domestic talent to go out, sort of see the world, and then bring more expertise back to the island.
Okay, well, with that, I'm going to open up Q&A with the audience. If you could identify yourself and maybe target your few specific panelists that you would like to address the question to.
Charles Song, and working for the federal government, but I have to give a disclaimer here. I'm attending this event in my personal capacities. And what I'm saying that is not necessarily represent the opinions of the U.S. federal government. And I'm working multiple hats. One of them is serving on the executive committee of the federal IPv6 task force and the technology co-chair for the task force. My question, this is a very important issue, and I'm glad that Steve mentioned about some new initiative. I have not plugged in that one yet. But when we're talking about IoT, and there's a fundamental issue that has to be addressed before we can even reach that. And I know Cisco projected, Steve even quoted, 50 billion IoT devices by 2020, and Gartner saying 29 by 2020. But regardless, and without the global adoptions of IPv6, there's no IoT. And what is the strategies in terms of your new initiative with the Taiwan, Silicon Valley, and Arthur, and maybe Steve can address that as well. What would be the strategies moving forward to have that global adoptions of a V6 in place before you can have those billions of devices connected, because the V4 is running out? I guess we can take that offline.
Let me take another question before we have a panelist. Rita.
Hi, thank you. Rita Chen from the Central News Agency. I got two questions. The first question is for David. Every country is talking about like the innovation and around the world. And then we also see like there are a lot of plenty incubator, like in America, in Taiwan, even in China as well. And comparing with the Zhongguan village in Beijing, I'm just wondering what kind of the advantage does Taiwan have in this Asian Silicon Valley in development in initiative? Especially for like attracting the talent and the investment. And then my second question is for the Steve. You just mentioned about the IoT and the digital economy should be driven by the market. And we also saw that Facebook is also trying to make some adjustment for reassessing the Chinese market. I wonder from American government perspective, will you have any suggestion for like the American business while they are trying to build up a business in an unusual market, and how the higher standard can be protected and preserved for the in the digital economy? Thank you.
David, like.
Well, I can quickly answer. You know, participate in the international standard, governing or you know. Setting a body is, you know, to the best interest of Taiwan government as well. So I think in terms of IPv6, yeah, I think that's the way to go. I think all the devices need to be compliant, and I'm sure that a lot of device companies they would do that too. So for the standard, I think you cannot, you know, reject to what the, you know, the trend is all about. And in terms of the how to compete with China. Okay. I think the China government has a lot of money, and they actually also backing by the government as well. However, I think what Taiwan has the age is about intellectual property protection. I think what's lacking, you know, in China, I also invest quite a lot, you know, quite a few companies in China. No respect to the IP or, you know, the integrity is an issue. So I would say for those people who are willing to do the incubation in Taiwan, incubator also not the physical, you know, space or office space. More important is the mentorship and be able to access to, you know, the capital investment as well. I would say Taiwan does offer better in terms of the hardware support or the, you know, the testbed area. Maybe it's an age beyond that. But I think the most important is the IP protection.
And actually, you know, I think what I can say is that we in the U.S. government are very aware of the challenges that the U.S. and other companies face in the digital economy space and internet-based services in operating in China. We have differences with China in terms of our approach to internet governance more broadly. And I'll just say that, I mean, these are issues and discussions that we engage with China on in multiple fora and on a very regular basis, and we'll continue.
I just want to respond to the concern of standard setting. So usually when government agencies, they can assist with the standard setting, but like I come from the education field, and the last big standard set in educational technology was Scrum, and then it fell apart a couple of years ago because it was sort of created in a vacuum and not from the industry. And so in the past, in the technology industry, we've seen a lot of collaboration between large corporations and companies that usually you observe some sort of commercial adoption before you start to see, okay, what has worked, and then start to abstractify, and then that becomes the standard. So I think for IoT, that in the US we see, you know, big players like General Electric, and in Germany you see all the car companies, Mercedes and BMW, they're taking initiative in these areas. That I think these are actually also very important drivers in creating that. And in Taiwan, that obviously Taiwan has a lot of large corporations that in electronics and in manufacturing. I think eventually they will also need their participation in order to really push the standard setting effort.
Do we have more questions?
My name is Tony Kane from American Councils for International Education. So working in education, I was interested in your remarks about that kind of cross-disciplinary need in education. I mean, I doubt if anybody would argue with the fact that the presence of Stanford in Silicon Valley was instrumental in that development. I mean, I knew kids who were going to Stanford in the late 80s and 90s that were practically making up new majors. And, you know, they're the successful people now. You mentioned four universities, at least on your slide, that were working. I wonder if either of you are aware of that kind of innovation that's actually taking place. What universities are leading in this, and how important is that, and what is the government doing to support that?
Well, in terms of multidisciplinary training, I think Taiwan University already adapt D-School, the design school, and they also encourage people not just have one major, you know, will be more cross-trained. But I think a lot of people need to learn computing, and need to learn software engineering, and also management as well. So I think that's the success of the entrepreneurship training in Taiwan. And we want to create an academy to train more people who are familiar with the, you know, internet economy or the digital age. Digital economy. So that area, we will create more training, even retrain, you know, the existing workers, you know, not just whoever in school. I think a lot of working force need to be retrained.
And so in terms of, I think, examples of how that the sort of talent has been trained within the U.S., that. So yeah, you mentioned Stanford. So in terms of robotics and artificial intelligence, there are a couple of leading
institutions of Stanford, Berkeley, Carnegie Mellon, and MIT have made a lot of breakthroughs. And so Carnegie Mellon actually was the first university in the world to sort of break apart traditional departments and then actually pull these faculty members and form the Robotics Institute. So they take a field and took people from different academic angles and make them work together. And it did the same with artificial intelligence and human-computer interaction became user experience. And I think that's a pretty great model for future university, which in the last 20 years we've seen a lot of schools like Arizona State, Cornell, Georgia Tech, they've also done very similar initiatives. And from the federal government, so again, from because I came from education, I'll use that as an example, that in the early 2000s, that after I believe became as a part of a No Child Left Behind, that there was a provision to create a fund to fund scientifically informed education policies and technologies. So that that actually created interdisciplinary educational technology research programs at I believe 24 universities. I know NYU and Carnegie Mellon are two of them. So basically, they took students who are interested in education and then exposed them to economics, exposed them to computer science and statistics and various other fields, and make sure that the PhD students are graduating. They don't just know educational policies, but they're also well aware of the scientific implications and also technology feasibility. So I think, yeah.
Sorry, I was actually asking about Taiwan.
Tell university. So my, so based on my, so my last couple of visits, I think to NTU and then NCTU, I believe the model is still more traditional compared to U.S. universities. That a lot of these initiatives are housed under usually the College of Engineering, and where it comes short is that you don't have the social sciences and humanities and basic science faculty to sort of complement that. So I think that actually needs to come from a sort of university level restructuring to create these new institutes that bring together interdisciplinary faculty.
Yeah, just one more note. Actually, the NTU garage, the chairman has become the deputy minister of education, and the government just granted him $60 million this week to do the entrepreneurship and the startup and the multiple training in that area too. So I think they will focus more from the academic area and how to, you know, do more outside the box thinking. Because it used to be the education minister is education is very conservative and they are just focused on the pure science and also paper. So, but now they would like to do a more startup, you know, kind of work, you know, even with the university capacity.
Thank you. People, do you like to?
Those guys have really good answers.
Okay, well, with that, I'm afraid we've run out of time for today's seminar. Thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much for participating today as our panelists.